Okay, thank you. So talking about simple physics, I'm going to follow in the same direction. And I'm sorry, but I'm not an experimentalist. I'll say I'm sorry as well. This is very, very largely the work of Hendrik de Haan, who sits at the back there. He's a backbencher today. He was a postdoc in my group when he did that. He's now a faculty staff at UOIT, not very far from here. So here is the question, very simple question. We have a polymer stuck in a nanopore. Half of the polymer is on one side of the wall and half on the other side. And for obvious reasons, entropic reasons, the polymer is not happy in that situation. So it's going to escape from there with time. And this is, I see a black. Okay, so it's going to escape. The question is, how does the escape time scale with the number of monomers? So tau scales with n to the 7 power alpha. The very first theory that was published predicted that this exponent should be 2, which is just a simple diffusion model. The length of the polymer is n. The length that you have to diffuse over is n, so it takes n square steps to do so. Another theory predicted it should be 3. 3 is reptation-like, so the model looked like reptation in a certain sense. And of course, there were other papers, and the one that attracted the most attention predicted actually an exponent of 2.2, which is what you expect if there is no wall. That's the scaling of the time it takes for the polymer to move over its own size, and it's 2.2. And then there were other papers predicting something around 2.5 and 2.6. So we had a lot of these exponents, and there was a exponent war, actually, in the field. And people disagreed very, very strongly. I knew about it because since I had no personal opinion, I was the referee for most of the papers arguing about this. I was getting these papers again and again and again. So we looked at this issue, and in fact, the first paper we published, we actually agreed with 2.2. And then we thought, okay, let's modify the simulation. And the one modification, we did Langevin simulation, and the one modification, this is the simplest possible problem, right? I mean, if we cannot understand this, we cannot understand any translocation problem, you know, a polymer going through a nanochannel. We have to understand this problem. There's no interaction, no potential, nothing. So we redid this, and what we did was to change the simplest possible parameter, the size of the hole. Let's change the diameter of the hole very, very slowly and see what happens. So this is the raw data, the translocation time versus the number of monomers on a log-log scale. The gray zone, the bottom part, is when the polymer is smaller than the hole. So it's just diffusion across a wall through a big hole. At the top, it's when the polymer is much larger than the hole. So it's really translocation the way we conceive it. And these lines have different slopes. The exponent changes with the pore size. And when we plot the exponent as a function of the pore size, the radius of the channel, we get an exponent that goes from 2.2 for a really tight channel to something like looks like 3 for a very large channel. So we published that, and the referees had very interesting opinions about this. But basically what this says is that give me your exponent, I'll tell you where it is on this, right? I mean, we could recover every single theory or publish a simulation paper with this, except 2. 2, we couldn't go down to 2. So why is that? Now, this model assumes that the main source of friction is in the pore. The friction between the polymer and the liquid on the outside is not very relevant. That's what it assumes. It also assumes that the polymer relaxes fairly quickly. So is 2.2 a universal exponent? 95% of the papers, simulation papers, gave 2.2, but they all used pretty much the same simulation approach. So no surprise they got 2.2. When we increase the pore size, we got something else. We got 3. Can we get 2? That was one of the questions we asked ourselves. So what is the second simplest parameter you can change? It's the viscosity of the liquid. So we decided to change the viscosity of the liquid and see what happens. So you can see if the liquid is not very viscous in this regime here, the translocation time actually does not depend on the viscosity of the liquid. This is what I just said. The main source of friction is the friction between the polymer and the nanopore. So it doesn't matter what happens outside. When you really increase the viscosity to a very large number, the translocation time increases linearly with viscosity. All of a sudden, the nanopore is not relevant. Everything happens outside. Well, guess what? Most people were using something right at the curvature there in the transition regime. So that's one of the issues. So now if you plot this exponent as a function of viscosity, you go from 2 to some other number. In our manuscript, when we submitted the paper, we said it's probably asymptotic to 3. One of the referees was the author of the paper that predicted 2.59, and of course disagreed with our estimate of the asymptotic value, and says, yeah, it's a proof that my paper is right. I cannot prove it's right or wrong. I'll leave it to you. Is it 3 or not? I don't know. I have no idea. So we got that. Now, how can we drive this thing? Normally, when people do these experiments, they actually apply an electric field. So there is an electric force on the monomers, and the monomers are charged. It's normally DNA, and it's driven by an electric field. But there are other sources of chemical potential, or differences in chemical potential, and I will explore a few. Translocation of polymers also occur in natural environment. In natural environment, you don't have pure liquid on both sides. You don't have only an electric field. You have all kinds of things on both sides. So we thought, let's explore what would happen if the both sides were slightly different. Can we drive the translocation, speed up the translocation by having different sides? So the obvious one is to have obstacles on both sides, but with different densities. In this case, we have periodic obstacles. They're spheres in 3D. This is not a 2D model. It's a 2D representation of a 3D on the left. And what happens if we change the spacing between, so it's a colloidal crystal, if you wish, with different spacing? I think the answer is pretty obvious. It's undergraduate physics. There's more space at the bottom. Right? There's more entropy at the bottom, so the polymer is going to be driven that direction. And indeed, we keep the spacing to 2.5 on one side, and we change the spacing between the beads on the other side from 1.4 to 3.6. So at 2.5 in the middle, it's 50-50. There is no bias. Both sides are identical. And you drive the thing towards the side with the larger spacing, the more free volume. That's absolutely trivial. And the translocation time itself is maximum when there is no driving force, when the spacing is the same on both sides. No surprise. With a simple free volume calculation, you just compute the number of conformations the polymer have access to on both sides. You can transform the spacing between the obstacles into a free energy. And if you do that and you replot the data, you find that this free energy is roughly of the order of 0.1 kT. Okay, keep that in mind because I'll use that a bit later. Here is a tricky one. This is the question where a lot of people fail their test. Now I have the same number of obstacles on both sides, the same free volume on both sides, except one side is ordered and the other side is disordered. So what would happen? In principle, the free volume being the same on both sides, it should be 50-50. There should be no bias in this thing. The polymer should go either way. I asked that question in Germany in a conference. I remember that in a seminar. There were the three famous professors were in the front, and all the postdocs and the graduate students were at the back. So I asked, raise your hand, people who think that it's going to go to the ordered side. The three profs raised their hands. None of the students raised their hands. And I said, who thinks it's going to go on the disordered side? Of course, all the students and postdocs raised their hand. Actually, the way we do it is we change the disorder very, very slowly, more or less like what David explained, by adding a random displacement to each of the bead using a Gaussian distribution. So we can control the amount of disorder very, very slowly. And if we increase the number of disorder, the amount of disorder, the polymer moves 90% of the time towards the disordered side. So the three profs were wrong, and all the postdocs and the graduate students were right. Translocation time goes down, which is not surprising whatsoever. Why is that? It's a manifestation of what is called entropic trapping. In a disordered environment, the polymer chain will eventually find an empty spot, a spot or an area which is less dense in the obstacle, and the polymer will have a maximum entropy in that region. Of course, it doesn't exist on the ordered side. So it does find something near the wall which is more open, and that's the driving force, basically. Interestingly enough, if you order both sides and you apply a force in the pore, you get the exact same result. The exact same curve on the left, percentage of event to the disordered side or the favored side versus polymer size. And the mean first passage time for each monomer is the same. So it's absolutely equivalent. You can remove the disorder and apply a force, you have the exact same physics, which I find really fascinating. And look at the forces of the order of 0.1 kT. I remind you that I told you to keep that in mind. As a matter of fact, you can replace disorder by a difference in concentration or a force, and you get the exact same physics. So these three things, disorder, concentration of obstacles, and a force in the nanopore, is the same physics. In a real biological system, you have all three of them, most likely. Therefore, you have to keep track of everything. Finally, what about a gradient of viscosity? Inside and outside the cell, there's no reason to believe that the viscosity is the same. It's most likely very, very different. Therefore, there is something there that's interesting. Now, in this simulation, there's no obstacle on either side. So the number of conformation available, or the entropy of the polymer, is the same on both sides, except that it's moving faster on one side than the other, or it's fluctuating or relaxing faster. Is that the driving force? If you use a Boltzmann factor, obviously, you predict that it should be, there should be no bias in this thing. But actually, when you increase the viscosity difference, there is a bias. It's going towards the lowest viscosity side with high probability, which is interesting, isn't it? Because if you use a Boltzmann factor, you cannot predict that. There's something wrong with this. Again, you can replace this difference in viscosity by a force. Now, this is tricky. If you do the Langevin simulation, this is what you find. The polymer prefers the low viscosity side. If you do Brownian dynamic simulation, where there's no inertia in your simulation, you get the exact opposite. And I have no time to explain why, but it proves that Brownian dynamics is wrong, actually. This is the right answer. And the two are not equivalent in all cases. And if you look at the exponent, you remember the scaling exponent, the time scales with the molecular size with some exponent alpha. If you drive the system with a gradient of viscosity, in fact, this exponent has a maximum, not when the two viscosities are equal, but it's at 2. Now, why is it that a gradient of viscosity can drive the system? That's an interesting question in itself, right? We have debates at the APS with a group from Finland about this. There are many interpretations, and Hendrik and I, we don't completely agree on what represents the best explanation. But since I have the mic today, I'll give you my interpretation. Of course, entropy is driving this thing one way or another. The phase space is the same in principle on both sides because there's no obstacles, there's no constraints, there's no borders, there's nothing. However, one side explores the phase space faster than the other. And this thing is not a steady state situation because it's the mean first passage time. When the polymer is out, it's out and the problem is finished. So one side explores a much larger part of the phase space than the other part. And this is what matters. It's not an equilibrium problem. It's an out-of-equilibrium problem. There are other explanations, other ways of looking at this problem, and you can ask Hendrik about that. So conclusions, I think I'm in time. Conclusions, translocation can be driven by many different types of chemical potentials. Obvious ones, like an electric field, but not obvious ones. And in a real biological system, you have these completely different environments on both sides. And the fact that you have a different concentration of obstacles, a different order of obstacles, and different viscosities, of course, matters. And we've shown that you can drive translocation with this. We have looked at vibrating obstacles. And the fact that the obstacles move or do not move doesn't change the situation at all. What we haven't looked at, and a Chinese group actually looked at some aspects of this, is what happens if you have the same free volume, but the obstacles have different sizes. And it does matter, actually, as well. And I'll leave it at this. Thank you.
So we have some.